I'm here in Saggart, and I'm talking to Dick Farley, who we've spoken before, Dick, and I'm also talking to Kit Brady, and I've also spoken to you many years ago, and it's great to be back in your house again and talking to you. So we're talking about the Saggart paper mills here. So Kit, where exactly was the factory?
Just up from the village. You know, like, I took photographs from the tower, the church tower, like, and you can see the chimney of the factory and the pavilion that was attached to a sports club, you know, a dance hall.
But it was describe it to me. How big was it?
Oh, God, it was pretty big.
Well, I wouldn't say it's, what, 250, I think, was...
There was nearly 400 in it when number four machine was gone.
No, number four, that was near the end, yeah.
Yeah, near the end.
Yeah, there was the best part of it, I think, 400 in it. But that was only for a short time, yes, I'd say, you know. Number four, they had four machines, you know. But after that now, I don't know what else I can say about it.
How many people did it imply when you were there?
Well, I was my number was 202, so I said there must have been around 400 in it, wasn't there?
400 near the end, you know? But my recollection is 250.
Yeah, when you worked in the office, Dick, didn't you?
So, later.
Yeah, so and yeah.
Near the end, I worked in the office, yes. That's right.
Where did you start, Dick, again, when you went in?
When I went in, I started up at the top loft.
All right, yeah.
Up where the potcher was.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you mean? Can you describe that to me?
Well, it was really the mixture for the paper making. There was the beaters.
Yeah.
There was the
and man, the breakers.
The man that ran he was known as the beater man.
Yeah.
And he had an assistant. Which the mixed, they had this big, you wouldn't fit it, huge, big tub, spinning all the time with wood pulp. China clay.
Alum, anything that went into the particular brand of paper they were making at the time.
Oh, what were you doing, Kit?
Well, I started on the farm up there, pulling ragwort weeds for Miss Jean. That's where I started. And then I was sent up to the sheds. My father was the foreman, one of the foremen in the sheds, you know. And that was, that entailed like bringing in pulp and all the ingredients that went into the paper making. And you brought it in there into the beaten loft where Dick is talking about.
Where did the ingredients come from?
Oh, well, the wood pulp came from, I think.
No, but what made up the wood pulp? Where did the china clay and the...
Oh, they all came in from farms, you know.
Yeah.
No, all the wood pulp came in at the docks, you know. Came into Ireland. Was imported.
But before the pulp came in from abroad...
It was paper. It was mostly rag paper then. Do you know? Like
the women.
I have a picture there of my mother and all in the rag loft in 1912.
Oh, I must see that.
Yeah. Well, definitely, before you go and get and root them out.
Known as the rag pickers.
Yeah, that's right. I said that on the thing that the interview that they were known as the rag pickers of Saggart, and it was derogatory, you know. Way it was meant, you know.
Yeah,
I saw a man getting laid out in the pub in that pool over the same remark. he called them rag pickers, and he was put down straight away.
Well, the women worked very hard. They used to have the knife. It was affixed to the bench, and it was their job to cut up the rags on them into smaller.
The way they did it.
Yeah, then it was all sent up to the beaten loft to be. There was two big boilers up at the top mill too, that they used to boil the rags in. Now, I don't know anything about it because I didn't have any interest in it. But like the man John Tyndall.
Gavin.
Yeah, he worked at the... And the rags were put into these big... It was a huge thing, you know, two of them. And the rags were put in, and you know what was put in with them? Caustic soda.
That's right.
And the caustic came in drums, you know, the 45-gallon drums.
But that would burn the hands off you, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it came in the barrel, and the barrel had to be cut with a chisel.
Yeah.
And then he had a big sledge that was called Munda. It was 14-pound weight. And he used to put a sack over the caustic soda, you know, you can get in the pit, and break it up, and it'll be put into the with the rags. Now, I don't know why. I have no other explanation or no any more about it, you know. But that's how the, it was a, the sledge would hardly be able to lift it, you know. All you do is lift and let it fall and it'd break it, you know.
And what was your mother's name?
Esther. Esther O'Neill was her maiden name.
And so when she was there, she was there as a young girl, was she?
Yeah, but she was married in this picture because you can see the ring on her finger, you know, when you look close at it now, you know.
Yeah.
And my father, like, is in it as well.
Yeah.
All local women, women from Ratcool and Saggart.
Yeah.
So it was Annie Timmins gave it to me years ago.
Annie, yeah. Annie is still alive, isn't she?
Annie is still alive, yeah. She's over 90.
And from as far back as you can remember, who was managing it in
Hawes your time? Was always the boss in my time. But before his time, there was Drury, was the name of the man that had it.
Where did he come
Drury.
From?
Drury. I don't know where he came from. But it finished, and then Hawesborough bought after him.
And did you know Drury?
Oh, no. No, but my older sister would have known. She would have been there at 16 years of age.
Yeah.
Do you know? Oh, no, sorry. No, Hawesborough was in it when my sister was... she died only a few years back. She was 94. And she was in it at 16.
Imagine.
She's in some of the photographs, like, and my father. Yeah. They're all in it, you know.
Okay, so...
Yeah, some great photographs.
Yeah. Everybody locally seemed to be working in there.
Yeah,
it was the main source of employment, wouldn't it?
It was, yeah.
It was the only source of employment.
It was the only
employment
around here.
And I think there was a feeling at that time, people used to say, if you didn't work in Swiftbrook, you'd get a job no place. Like, as I told you when I spoke to you before, there was lads just didn't get time to get their coat. They were sacked on the spot for smoking or whatever.
Yeah, or drinking tea. Oh, yeah, that was before I went into it, you know. But even when I went into it, I was working in the machine and you weren't allowed to get tea at 4 o'clock or anything like that. And he came up one day, the boss, and Brendan Neal was the machine man and, of course, kicking up over the drinking tea in the machine. So there was a little bit of a party sent down to him and it was put to him that... If the machine wasn't going right, you didn't sit down to have your food. You eat at the machine, you know.
Yeah.
But if the paper broke, you had to leave your tea and go and fix the machine. You could go back to tea and be all cold and that, you know.
So was there a strict regime there for the workers?
Very strict.
Very much so.
When the boss left his house, which was down in the bottom of the mill, you know, when he left his house, everybody in the mill knew he was on his way. And here's the sign, he's up. You could be up the machine, somebody, you'd look down at the lad, he's saying he's up, you know. And if it was Ewan was coming, he was the mill manager.
He's on
it. That's what you got. Because he used to have real tight haircuts, you know.
Yeah.
But he was...
He black hair, brushed black well back. Yeah. And this was the way it was.
Yeah. I'm sure Ewan didn't mind whilst the work was going on, he didn't mind. But,
yeah.
Like, Tom Timmins now. Was out in the toilet and Willie Murray, this on a 2 to 10 shift, smoking.
Who's Tom Timmins?
He was another worker. Annie's husband, now that we're just talking about giving me the photograph. He's gone, dead and gone. But he said, I was out there, Kate, and I was just standing with me shoulder again, the jamb of the door, smoking. And I was looking at the floor and we heard the lad coming in, but they never thought it was the boss, you know. And the next thing he said, I saw the brown shoes and the trousers. And he was rooting for he took out a cigarette packet to write down the couple of names. And Willie Murray was an elderly man now that was there from Hawesborough's first time, you know. And Tom Timmins gave him a lend of a biro to write down their names on the cigarette packet.
And sacked them.
And no, he didn't sack them. He was drunk, sure. And he went up to Murray, who was up at the breakers. And he said, when you were right old fool to get your name in front of the pen. Oh, well, he says, sir, I wasn't such an old fool when you came here first, was I? When we worked night and day to keep this place going. That was all, no more about it. Yeah. But, and Joe Kyo, another chap working in the glaze room, you'd be looking for a brush to sweep the floor, that, you know. And he'd go out to the boiler, and of course you'd have a smoke in the boiler. And Jim Riley was the boiler man, and who walks in? Only the boss. Catches the man sitting smoking. You're fired, you get your cards going home this evening. You know, And when Joe, of course, picked up the brush and went off real quick, and he said, "Well, what have you to say for yourself to the boiler man, Jim Riley?" And, he says, "If you want me to say something," he says, "the chap only came out to get the brush to sweep inside." He says, "Why not give him a chance?" He wasn't doing any harm out here. And the lad went in and told Joe, "You needn't come down for your cards." He was that unpredictable, you know. He was very unpredictable, the boss, you know.
The atmosphere then working must have been very difficult. Like intimidation in a way.
It was a terrible happy place.
Yeah,
as my wife likes, everyone was very happy in it.
Yeah,
in spite of the fact that we had this regime of But I told you about the foreman, Red Mick McDermott. That man, you know, that was a terrible thing that happened. And the worst part of it all was the workers didn't stand behind them, which wouldn't happen at the time anyway. Yeah. But he came in, it was 10 to 6, the night shift.
No, the 2 to 10.
Was it? I was on the number
the two,
3.
The 2 to 10, and it was dark, it was winter time.
The 2 to 10,
and I was in hospital, I was out of an accident on the motorway. And Joe Timmins went outside the door and lit a cigarette outside, and the boss was down the field putting in the hens for his daughter. She kept hens in the field. And he saw the light and, of course, came up. But when he came up, your men were back in. And he walked and he caught Tony McDermott. Who else did he sack? And then went straight in and sacked the foreman. And his motto was, they should be afraid to smoke in case you'd catch them, the foreman.
Right, and
that was the way he sacked them. Anyway, he went and ended up then in Killeen.
The foreman was involved, remember, that night with a broken machine that had broken down. He was trying to, for 2 hours, he was trying to get her going again.
But this man, he just got away with it, didn't he?
Oh, very much so.
No, the foreman was sacked, and he ended up down a foreman in Killeen paper mill. Oh. You know, Reza McDermott, Mick McDermott was his name. You know, he was a foreman.
And he was sacked by
the boss, Hosborough. Hosborough through all that, yeah.
He wasn't obviously liked by yourselves.
No, he wouldn't talk to you or anything.
Yeah.
If you met him when we'd be going down the avenue and you meet him coming walking up, he wouldn't say hello, lads, or anything like that now.
Yeah.
When it shut and I went to the Electron and there was a returned Yank was the boss, the engineer, you know.
Oh, yes.
And don't call me Mr. Fry, you know, I'm Stan. That was the attitude. I couldn't get over it.
It just changed.
Yeah, it changed completely, yeah.